Welcome to the Scrum Down. Ahmed Fried, Alex Corbisero. We have a lot to talk about. That's why I'm talking so fast right now. Alex, good to see you once again. I'm actually really happy because I've had my Bang energy drink today.
I knew that's why you were talking fast.
And I am expecting a whole case to arrive in the mail at some undisclosed time.
Yeah, as soon as you actually disclose your address to me is what I've been waiting. I don't know. You seem to be very private about that. Yeah, I owe you a case of Bang, mate. I was wrong. Yeah. I was wrong.
See, so if you did not listen to the last episode, shame on you. But Alex and I made a friendly wager on the final match in the Six Nations between Scotland and France in Paris. Alex said that not only would France win the game, they would cover the 15.5 points, and they would be hoisting the Champions Cup trophy. That didn't happen. And I was giving a lot of credit to Scotland, Alex, not to toot my own horn, but let me just toot my own horn, because I said that going into next year, maybe they should be considered to be in the discussion for a possible championship. Alex poo-pooed it. He laughed at me. He mocked me. And now I feel like I'm having my day in the sun, Alex.
Mate, I'm letting you enjoy it. I don't have any comebacks, all right? My predictions weren't bad, the Six Nations. And my betting predictions, you know, usually at least 2 from 3 every weekend, occasionally 3 from 3. This was a 0 from 1, I guess, actually. I forgot there's no other games. But yeah, this was not my day. And you know what? Credit to Scotland. I think I will rise above it. I still think on a different day, if France weren't chasing a big score, I think they would have won that game. I just think they still were slightly the better team. But when one team's trying to go full, you know, fifth gear, drive, get to that big score, and the other team in a wet, rainy day is kicking well, you know, fighting every breakdown, you know, getting into it in the scrum, getting that maul pressure, holding onto the ball in your own half, all the tools that Scotland used to frustrate France and negate any of maybe the perceived physical advantages in the contact that I thought would maybe we steer the game to France's way. Like France are game and looking to attack, but because they're under pressure, because they're wet, and probably because it's this team's first go as a young team chasing a Six Nations, they're a little, you know, nervous and inaccurate. And that just played into Scotland's game more and more. And as they controlled it, you know, Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg, you know, their kicking games with Ali Price was just too much for France to sort of steer back the full control of the game and get it, actually build a lead to get ahead. Because once the game sort of dragged on and you realize Scotland were in this to the end, you saw France kind of sink a little bit, and then Scotland won it. It was an amazing finish.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point, because if you're France, you're trying for the ultimate goal, and once you see that's not attainable, you're going to lose a little bit of your drive and your edge. So we're going to pick Alex's brain about this game. We're going to pick Alex's brain about the knockout round, the resumption of Champions Cup. We'll talk a little bit about the Premiership, and we'll also talk about the British and Irish Lions Tour. It looks like it's going to happen. So we got a lot to get to in this half hour, but let's fully explore the final of Six Nations, which, first of all, Alex, it'll be so much better when there are fans there next year. It's like such a bummer that we didn't have fans, but the fact that we were able to do it and there was really only one postponement that threw everything off. And I do think that altered the fate of this tournament. Like, I think if that doesn't happen, I mean, who knows?
But you don't France know, but I think have France a better win. Chance. Yeah, and yeah. It might be, I've been trying to dissect this and think, is it my ego that thinks I picked France and they got Corona and that was an excuse that led to their sort of perceived unraveling in this tournament, or where this just always potential that the potential for this to happen, the Six Nations is so bloody competitive. Like, that is the talking point for me, is no clear dominance in this competition and, you know, lots of tight games across the board. Or was it Corona that slowed France's momentum and they would have won that England game and then rolled through to the would have won the Scotland game probably and rolled through to those last two. And who knows? I don't know. Like, no, we'll never know. But all we'll know is that, you know, Wales are the Six Nations champions. And I think the other touching point for me is this is 2 Six Nations in a row where we've not got, like, yes, we need fans, but we don't even get the trophy lift in the stadium. You know, England, we got some video a few days later of them, at some, grass field outside their hotel or somewhere, some of them lifting a trophy. Wales, there was some of the Welsh players lifting a trophy at some indoor facility, but I'm sure a lot of them who don't play in Wales are already back at their clubs. So it's been one of those years, let's just say. So I think we're all ready for the fans to roll back into this competition and make it even more special. But what I think the big takeaway is, even without fans, the rugby and the on-field product, you'd probably argue maybe minus Italy, really did deliver.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, some of the best finishes round to round. Like every round, there was one game where you're like, wow, that was an unbelievable match, unbelievable finish. So what do you think about Wales? Because you can make the argument they had the benefit of, I think, three red cards when it was all said and done. One came early, again, their first one. The other came second half. But they had the benefit of those great calls against England. So, okay, agree or disagree? Wales is the least deserving Six Nations champion in decades.
Disagree, because, listen, there are mitigating factors to the successfulness of Wales, especially earlier in the competition and the results they got. And I think part of that could be also that no one expected them to win, so it fit the narrative better as well, that those were excuses. But at the end of the day, they won 4 from 4 and then went away to Paris and put France through the ringer and lost in the last seconds. Like, to me, they deserve to be champions. They almost deserve to be Grand Slam champions. And, you know, they don't control the luck or the rub that they get in the games. And credit Pivac and his team. He stuck with them through a rough 2020. He didn't make huge changes. He didn't like freak out. Like, they were under a lot of pressure and they turned up this Six Nations. They rolled their sleeves up regardless how they got it, and they got the result. So for me, I think you can't say Wales aren't deserving, because just the game in Paris alone, the fact that regardless of however they maybe got a little bit of a head start against England with some favorable calls, they still beat England. And to beat England is a tough, like, all these outs are tough. Like, it is, you know, they beat Wales. I mean, they beat Scotland and Ireland, which is, you know, yeah, there was red cards in those games, but they were it's still tight games that they won. And I think that's the competitiveness of this tournament and the ability that anyone got to 4 from 5 really, you know, put them in good stead.
So we talked about this a little bit last time, and so we'll just finish up with a look ahead. And a lot of people have anointed, you included, France as like the next big thing. You know, we think that they're going to be the favorites in the Rugby World Cup next year. Six Nations, they got a young team, a lot of great young talent. So as we look ahead, I'm going to make you put a percentage chance that they win. So I'm going to go with Italy, and I'm going to give them a 0% chance that they win the whole thing next year. Who would you give still on this day the highest percent chance of winning Six Nations next year?
France.
Okay.
I still think France. I'm curious to see how England bounce back from this and what changes they make in the summer. And obviously there's the Lions disruption tour, so they won't have a lot of their best players in camp, but they'll have time to play tests and make some adjustments. So I'm curious, by the time they hit, you know, the Six Nations next year with an autumn set of games and some time to make some adjustments, where they get to. But I think you got to look at France. Wales aren't going, none of the teams are going anywhere. There's no team that is like aging out of and fading out of this tournament. So I just think it sets up next year as another competitive lottery. I think France will be so much better prepared with this experience of the Six Nations under their belt, young squad, faced adversity, you know, lost two close games against England and against Scotland, which decided their tournament for them. So they'll have a lot to learn. England just got to make some tactical adjustments and sort of rejig their game plan. Ireland, I think, are only going to get better and better. So you don't know where they're going to turn up. Scotland, I think, are still improving, and Wales are improving, even though maybe Wales probably, I don't know the stats for sure, but my instinct is Wales probably have the oldest squad, but just based on the experience they have in that team, but you're not 100% sure. They would be the one that you think would maybe be the most inclined to decline, but I still think it's going to be a neck and neck Six Nations again. Like, the gap is closed between the teams. There's always, like, the last couple of years, England have had a bit of a superiority when they're fully loaded. You know, France looked that way at times, but man, everyone's got tactical game, kicking game, physical, good set piece. Anyone can win these games but Italy at the moment.
Okay. tell me if you agree with this. 25% chance France wins next year. I'm going to give England 22% chance. I'm going to give Wales a 19% chance. I'm going to give Scotland a 19% chance. And that gives Ireland a 15% chance. I think that was pretty good, actually.
It's not bad, mate. The bookies.
That's pretty good.
Should we just send that to the bookies now? And get the odds in now. Ahmed's odds has been set aside.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm glad that we got that tournament in and it finished. It was exciting. Came down to literally the very last game. So let's move on now. We hope that Champions Cup has just as an exciting a finish. But we are resuming play. We didn't get to play the last couple rounds, so they had to kind of just figure out who are the 16 teams that were going to go to the round of 16. We figured it out. We've got the defending champions there in Exeter in a Saturday game, taking on Lyon at Sandy Park. They don't look like the defending champions of anything right now, and I think that might be a theme with some of these Premiership teams, Alex, is that Wasps have a game, and Sale has a game in here, right? So it's like, I don't know that Bristol's the only club in the Premiership that's like, all right, they might have a legit chance. It doesn't appear like Exeter really has a grand chance to repeat.
So I think Exeter go out and smash Lyon this weekend.
Ooh.
This is why. Okay. So I think that last weekend they lost to Gloucester, but they rested some of their players. And they've had guys on an international campaign. They've had, you know, they had guys that went back for that Scotland game. A lot of moving parts, but now they're fully loaded and they've set themselves the sight on this tournament again. And I feel like they're going to empty the tank. And the fact that they're at Sandy Park, Lyon are a decent side, but I think Exeter Chiefs get their smash on Saturday in that game. This tournament is set up perfectly. It was frustrating to lose some of the final knockout rounds, but the final group stages, but it was a little bit of an anticlimax. Some of those group stages, it was a different format, you know, shorter games. If your game was called off, it could affect your chances of going in with Corona. So the fact that we just with COVID, it could affect you, you know, how your points in the table, because it was such short amount of games to qualify that it really dramatically impacted. Now we just have straight knockout. This is like pre-quarterfinal knockout. The European Cup used to have this back in the day, and I loved it. I think it's a better way. You whittle 16 down to 8, whittle 8 down to 4, 4 down to 2, and then we have a winner. Like, knockout rugby is what this European comp is about, and this is going to be fantastic. Like, that Exeter Chiefs game, I think, will be a great game. Exeter Chiefs, a little dip in form, but they'll have all their best pieces back, and I think they'll just have an emphasis about them to win at home and set a marker down in this tournament. If I look at some of the other games, Munster Toulouse, that's going to be an absolute barn burner. I think Munster will empty the tank. I think Toulouse will have too much for them. But the fact that it's in Munster, Toulouse are away. There's French players who've played a lot of, you know, who are maybe not quite at their best coming out of the Six Nations. There's a fair few in that Toulouse side. But I think Munster crack it. Wasps versus Clermont. I feel bad, but Wasps probably going to get slaughtered in that one. They're not quite at their best. Still missing a few key players. And Clermont Auvergne absolutely rise to the occasion in this tournament. They have still yet to win it, and they pride themselves on it. So look for them to go big in that game. And while I'm still looking, I'll just, you know, hold the mic. I'm used to that. Leinster Rugby versus Toulon. This is probably the game of the weekend. Which way this goes, Toulon look to be back to more of an ascendancy of what we've known from them in previous years. And Leinster, you know, coming off the back of a strong Ireland campaign at times, core amount of players there, and obviously pride themselves on this tournament as well and rectifying the issues that they lost to Saracens in the last one. So for me, I think that is a huge game that I'm going to favor Leinster because it's at home, but I wouldn't be surprised if that one went either way just because Toulon are a little bit of a juggernaut and big and physical again. Racing 92 against Edinburgh sets itself up perfectly. You know, I think Edinburgh have been game in this competition. A fair few of the Scotland contingent to return, but I think the Racing machine with Finn Russell at the helm will be too much. Bristol versus Bordeaux. The fact that Bristol have to go away. Bristol have looked incredible recently. Two come from behind wins in the dying minutes of games in the Premiership. We'll have a few of the England contingency back, which will boost them. But away in Europe in knockout rugby is never easy. And so that is one to watch. We have it on NBCSN. So we'll be getting into it. And then Sale Sharks versus Scarlets. That could go either way. There's a fair few Welsh players to return to that Scarlet side, which could be making an impact off the back of a successful Six Nations. But Wales are, Sale Sharks are a decent side. Physical can slow them down, get stuck into them, and frustrate them enough. AJ McGinty's a cracking 10 at the moment with Faf in that mix as well. And the Curry brothers and some of the other players that they've got. Sale Sharks, never know, could find a way to squeak a win in that one as well.
It's kind of cool that you mentioned a lot of the players coming back to their club teams. It's like a refocusing, right? Six Nations is so dominant and it takes up so much of your time and effort. And, you know, you're obviously playing for your country and that means a lot to these players. And so it is cool that that's done, that's in the books. And now you move on to this club competition throughout Europe that, speaking from a guy who's never played rugby in his life, but just knows how important it is for you guys. I mean, these are important weekends.
Absolutely. And sometimes as an international, it can be very hard to just come from that international environment and then you come straight back to club rugby and you still have the same intensity, commitment. It's just something about when you go to an international camp, you're not living at home, you're away from home, you're in this environment, it's high performance. The games are usually, in massive stadiums with huge crowds. This is obviously a little different. But now the fact that they're coming back and then it's not just another premiership game, it's knockout European rugby. It's the perfect thing to refocus yourself and get your mindset back to club rugby and that this is where it's at and you've had to park the Six Nations. The only issue is the physical toll that the Six Nations will take on players and that they have to be managed quite well in training and reintegrating and getting back into their club systems. But at the same time, not burning themselves out, that they're fatigued or underperformed this weekend. And that was one of my biggest balancing acts as a player, is I always found that first week or two back after international duty, a bit of an adjustment, and mentally finding that same level of dialed in intensity was always probably my biggest challenge.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. You did very well, as you mentioned, picking games in Six Nations, except for the final game, which I crushed you on.
Yeah.
So, if I'm putting you on the spot and you have to pick one or two favorites for Champions Cup, who are you leaning on?
Okay. One or two favorites for these Champions Cup teams. Let me get it through. I'm going to go for Leinster, Exeter, Racing, mm-hmm. and Toulouse.
Okay. So you really think Exeter, you're not giving up on them yet.
I think they'll find their gear, mate. They still have all the pieces. I just feel like, they've still got some players to come back. I just don't know if they'll have Henry Slade back because he was injured for England. So that's probably a big question for them. Jack Noel is another one that they need back. I'm not sure. I haven't seen their team if he's playing this week. But then, the fact they'll have Stuart Hogg, they'll have Gray back, they'll have Sam Skinner back, Johnny Hill back. Their team, I think, is only going to go, one way with intensity. They'll get Thomas Francis back from Wales. They're going to be a decent outfit there, and they're at home. And I just think the Exeter rumble will be back that weekend. And I just think when you're defending champs and you've already won this tournament, you back yourself. And Exeter, a team that just sometimes can find a way to win. Don't always take week-to-week premiership form in account when you roll into these big European knockout window weekends, because it's all about what happens on the day. It's not an accumulatory consistency factor. It's about what you do on the big games when it's on the line, and I think Exeter still have that in them.
All right, well, I can't wait. You got some big matches coming up on NBCSN, as Alex mentioned. Champions Cup is back, knockout, round of 16. Let's go to the premiership real quick, because that's where my questions were coming from, because you saw Exeter lose to Gloucester, who's, 11th in the table right now. But like you mentioned, they may have had their sights set a week in the future. But it has been a really interesting premiership. Of course, there's been a lot of attention on Six Nations and what's been going on there. There have been some stoppages, not a lot lately. I think we got all the matches in round 15, which was good to see. But as far as a playoff race, what was the match we had between us? It was, who was it, Alex? on NBCSN. It was Newcastle and Leicester.
Yeah, we had Newcastle and Leicester.
And Leicester won. It was like a disappointment start to the year, but Leicester got some players back. And we're like, all right, Leicester is now seventh in the table. Maybe they have a chance. It does seem like with a few rounds to go, the top four is certainly not settled yet.
No, and that's probably the biggest takeaway. Bristol have created enough space at the top where they look pretty secure. You know they're going to end up in the top four, definitely, pretty much at this point. And I'm pretty confident they'll now be in the top two, which gives them that home semi-final. So the big question is, who is the other top two team and who are these top four teams? Not set in stone, not defined at all. Exeter Chiefs, for the first time, have some work to do in the Premiership. Usually, their ability to just win consistently, even when their big players are away, means as the internationals return, there's not as much pressure to come straight back to win, to deliver, because the machine's been rolling. But when your machine's not been rolling as well, now they're like, oh, we actually need all our players back. And there's a massive emphasis that they can't relax in this tournament and just focus on Europe, which is what I think they did at the end of last season, because they ran up such a score. They knew they were coming in. They could play some younger players in some of those games, and they peaked for the big finals. They've got to dig deep and get some big results in the Premiership and win these knockout games in Europe. So I still think they'll make the top four and probably the top two. But it wouldn't, if they lose one or two games, mate, that you could be out of the top four. It is wild. Sale Sharks are going to take some beating. Harlequins are going nowhere. You saw they ran Bristol right to the end and probably deserve to win that game, which is a big statement when you look at the team that Bristol have. And then still, you know, Saints are able to, you know, still have time to put a run on. And somehow London Irish have found their way into sixth place and seem to be turning over teams with big results. So, you know, this race for the top four and then the top six is going to be very, very tight. And I think at the beginning with the Premiership, some people are like, oh, we can't, no relegation. These games don't mean anything. There's too many teams with stuff to play for any games to not mean anything. You know, no one wants to be at the bottom, yes, but at least not like none of them are getting relegated. But, you know, from, you know, 9th and 10th aren't out of the question to still be in the top six and make Europe next year. So that everyone's got something to play for in my mind. Top four, top six, and then playoffs and everything. I think the league sets itself up fantastically. And I've been impressed with the competitiveness of this league and the fact that Bristol have probably surpassed Exeter as the week-to-week, you know, most consistent top team. But that means nothing until these two play each other in knockout rugby. And the same thing with Sale Sharks and Harlequins. They could easily beat any of the teams in the top six as well. So bring it on, mate. Bring on the playoffs. Bring on everything.
Yeah,
it's been a brutal year with COVID, but we're getting ready for this and I'm excited for it. And the Premiership, you know, it got some flack when it restarted with a short preseason and it was probably not that exciting a catalog of rugby, but at the moment the Premiership is fun and good to watch, except for the odd dud game you get, which happens in week in, week out rugby. But on a whole, Premiership product's looking good and it's going to be a good run. And as the weather gets better and the pitches are nicer, we should see some nice running rugby finishing off the season.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it already. We saw Gloucester 11th place knock off the defending champions. Now the one game that is a dud is going to be Worcester. They went down 62-14 to Northampton. I think they fully embraced the fact there's no relegation. I'm going to say the Warriors have fully embraced the fact that they're coming back.
Fully embraced or, you know, fully, you know, secured in the fact that they're not getting relegated. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. Exactly.
The safety
net. They've become very comfortable with that idea.
Exactly. And this is the thing that they're still not a bad team. They're still able to win games. But yeah, they've sort of seemed to fall to the wayside, where a team like London Irish, which a lot of people, even myself, might have been worried of falling into a relegation battle this year. I don't know if it's since the pressure of no relegation or whatever changed there, they've just been surging. So you got to look at, you know, certain teams have taken it differently. But Worcester, 62 points in the Prem. You shouldn't be shipping that regardless of what's going on. And the fact that it was only 15-7 at halftime is absolutely mental. That Saints just were button bashing like a video.
Yeah, are we even sure that Worcester exited the locker room? Like, are we sure that they
just
went
didn't turn
the field?
Up? They just didn't. They declared.
Have to go back and check the tape.
Yeah.
So it should be a good finish in the Premiership as well. Final thing, Alex. Let's pick your brain. Let's get in that noodle about British and Irish Lions. The tour is on. It's going to happen. It's going on in South Africa, right? That's the plan, at least right now. And there's actually plans that they might have fans there. They're still discussing that.
Who knows, mate? So basically,
yeah, I know.
We've been waiting for this Lions announcement for so long. Like it, you know, they've been tossed and turning, and I feel for them. It must be such a logistical nightmare to get this up and off the ground. The fact that, you know, it looked like it might be at home purely because they thought they could have some fans and some form of product. And then government advice in the UK changed to no traveling internationally till after July. All these factors of extended lockdowns and everything just made it so that that option just seemed less and less viable. They couldn't get commitment there and they were just running out of time to commit somewhere. The Australia idea got investigated, but again, didn't quite work. And so really, you know, the only thing left on the table is to go back to South Africa. We don't know what that looks like. We don't know if they're going to play less games. I'm assuming they're not going to travel around and roam the country like before. We have no idea if there's fans yet. I think they've made a proposal to the South African government to have fans, but whether that's international fans or just domestic fans, very uncertain. And this is the tough part for the Lions. Commercially, their money is built around a tour, around fans, around packages. Yeah. It's always traditionally been that's where they make their money, and the hosting team made their money off the TV rights, the stadium gates, and the boost to the economy of 50,000 traveling fans. And so the thing that makes this so hard is most of those revenue streams are gone. Probably not, like the TV rights deals don't, you know, aren't enough to be shared and make this worthwhile for everyone. If no fans are at the stadium, it's not a huge boost to the home nation that's hosting it. And then lastly, if 50,000 fans can't come, the Lions don't make any money off all those packages and merchandising and everything that they do for those fans. And then they don't get the local boost to the economy, which is one of the biggest factors of the Lions tour. It can be a huge boost to have 50,000 traveling fans in your country just spending money for 6 weeks, having the time of their life. So it's left us in a tough situation. I'm assuming we'll get some sort of bubble vibe of them going on. They'll play fewer games, less teams, because it'll probably bring down some of the logistical nightmares of testing, quarantining, getting that going. And we'll get a form of Lions product. It's just unclear exactly what it's going to be. And yeah, it's sad. Well, I'm still amped for the Lions because I think after that Six Nations, can you imagine the best players from England, Wales, Scotland and Ireland coming together when you see some of the rugby? It's incredible. And it's such an amazing experience. The highlight of my rugby career, without a freaking doubt, the best time.
Is that true?
Yeah. It was a pinnacle, the highlight, the most special thing. It happens once every 4 years. You wear that shirt for life. It is honestly like, it is the crown jewel of my rugby career. It made 22 years of playing pretty much every weekend, all the graft, everything. It's probably the thing I can rest my mantle on the most that made it worth it, regardless of all the damage to my body and all these things, is the fact that I am Lion 801. I'm a Lion Series winner, and I got to wear that test shirt next to some absolute legends of the game that I delivered. You know, I sleep easy at night, even on bad, anxious days, because of that factor in the back of my mind. It is a calming feeling and a piece of, you know, fulfillment in my life that I'll never, ever forget. And that's why I hope these players get to experience some form of normality on this tour, and it's not that they're all bubbled separate rooms, not able to enjoy the time together, because that's what the Lions is about, is as a squad, starting as enemies because you've played each other for 4 years in the Six Nations and the battle lines are drawn, and you come together and by the end of it you're brothers, and you're throwing down against one of the best teams in the world, and you're trying to win a series. Like it's pretty special, mate. Like it's getting me amped up thinking about it.
I can tell, which is always why you make me throw that in there too. Series winner of the British and Irish Lions, yeah, along with Premiership champion, along with
last series winner since 1997. I feel like it should still be mentioned until these lads get it done this summer.
So can you do this in 2 minutes? Can you give us your team?
Okay.
If you had to pick.
Okay, Lions 15 off the bat. Okay. Loose head, I am going to go with Kian Healy. It's a tough one between Kian Healy, Wyn Jones, and Mako. And I feel bad for Rory Sutherland not getting in, but I think I'm going to go with Kian Healy, and then I'd probably go Mako on the bench for impact. Yeah. Hooker, I am going to go with the form he's on at the moment, Callan Dickie. And I would probably have people might think I'm biased here. It's a tough one between then Jamie George and Ken Owens. I think the three hookers are Cowan Dickey, Ken Owens, and Jamie George. I just don't know who I'd put on the bench between Jamie George and Ken Owens. It's a tough call between those two, but I think Cowan Dickey is my star at the moment. And then my tight head is a toss-up between Sinclair and Tag Furlong. It depends who's on the better form, but right now, based on what I saw in that final Six Nations, I'll go Tag. And they'll have Sinclair on the bench. And I think those are two very good front rows that could swap, and one comes on and brings impact. For me, that's sort of my Lions starting front row and the bench front row. Second rows, I'm going Maratoji, and I think I'm going to go with Maro, I need to pick a line out caller because that's what I think Maro works best with. And that's why he played better once Charlie Yules came in. So I'm going to go with Johnny Gray from Scotland. My back row.
The disrespect to Alan Wynne-Jones right there, but whatever.
It's a tough one. Okay. Alan Wynne might be in my team, might be on the bench. He's just in the mix, but like you could go, or even Marrow and James Ryan, but James Ryan didn't have the best Six Nations, so that's why I didn't do that. So I'll go with Gray and Marrow, and then I'll have Alan Wynne on the bench. And then my back row is going to be Tom Curry at 7. It's going to be Faletau at 8, and it's probably going to be Underhill at 6. I think that still balances the
Underhill. Okay,
I just think Tag Bernie. Tag Burns almost in there. If I don't have, well, that's the thing. You could just go, or actually, let me change my team. I'm going to go Marrow.
I knew it.
Alan Wynne. I'll go Tag at 6.
Whoa, you're putting Alan Wynne back in?
Yeah, because then I can put Tag at 6 to run the line out as
Alan,
well.
Yeah,
then
I got you thinking there. You don't want Alan Wynne to be listening to this and you leave off the...
Yeah, Alan Wynne, a big scrum down fad. I know he is. So I'm going to rejig it. So this is not 2 minutes, like I promised. I'm going to go... Let's just start again. I'm going Kian, Cowan Dickey, Tag Furlong. Bench props, I'm going Mako, Jamie George, Carl Sinclair. Then my second rows are Maratoje, Alan Wynne-Jones. My bench second row is Johnny Gray. And then my back row is Tag Burn at 6, Curry at 7, Faletau at 8. Scrum half, big call this one. I think I'm going to go with Davies from Wales. I think he's the one for me.
No Connor Murray. Okay.
Connor Murray's not my starting nine, no. And then I need someone with a bit more of a running threat against the box to make them respect to create space elsewhere. Fly half is a really tough one. Based on the Six Nations, I'm going to go with Finn Russell. I think Finn Russell at 10, 12.
No Johnny Sexton.
Probably going to have Owen Farrell either on the bench at 10 or I'll start him at 12. I feel like he should be in the mix. So I'll go 12. I'll go Owen Farrell. 13. I will go Jonathan Davis from Wales.
Okay.
Wings. I'm going probably Zammit and either Johnny May or Zammit and Van der Merwe.
You can't leave off my guy Stuart Hogg.
Stuart Hogg's my fullback. It's just which way I'm gonna go Van der Merwe with the physicality against South Africa. So I'll go Van der Merwe and Zammit and then Hogg at 15. And you know, if this England had done better in the Six Nations, there'd be more England players in my team. But that's it. So
George North, no. Robbie Henshaw, no.
See, these guys are almost in. Like Robbie Henshaw could be the 12. If I go Finn Russell, Henshaw, David, that might be the move as well. And then have Owen Farrell on the bench as the backup 10.
Your relationship with Owen Farrell is affecting your judgment.
It's compromising. No, but I think you got to have Farrell in your Lions 23. Like he fronts up for the Lions, mate. He was phenomenal in 2017. I just don't think you can ignore that. Putting him in that team, he'll be amazing.
All right, that is it. It is set in stone until he gets another call from Alan Wynn Jones and is prompted to change his team again.
It could change.
He's like Chuck he's like Chuck Norris. He's like, he will be on the team even if you don't want him on the team.
Exactly. He got away. You just can't get rid of him. Nah, he's just Alan Wynn's a hero, mate. And he's going to make this Lions tour. He definitely went 09 and 2013, 2017. This might be his fourth tour.
Be the first great grandfather ever to play for the British and Irish Lions.
Hell of an achievement.
All right, Alex. We went over, but it was needed. It was necessary.
We got there. Sorry, everyone, for that jumbled Lions 15, but it's there somehow.
we have Tess and Kristen back at NBC Sports that'll have to somehow sort their way through that. And we apologize, but thank you.
I feel like it's just going to get cut. There is no Lions 15. Just end the show.
Yeah. We'll do it on the next one then.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex, I cannot wait to see you again and have you supply me with that Bang energy drink.
Case. What flavor? Case? What flavor are we working with?
Bangster Berry is probably my favorite.
Bangster Berry. Right now, bro. What a name. All right, deal. I got you, mate. I got you. If you ever give me your address, there'll be a crate on its way.
Okay. Deal. All right. Alex Corbacero, series winner for the British and Irish Lions. Ahmed Farid, no such title yet. A winner of the bet. There we go. That's my win.
Winner of the bang.
All right. Yeah, there you go. Winner of the bang. That is the scrum down. We'll see you next week. We're out.